Okay, fun seekers, do we have a presentation for you? Because we're going to slog through an entire 1040 form for the typical homeowner. And so, are we going to teach you to be the tax preparers? No, but pretty darn close, because if you can do the tax form that we do here together, and then the second tax exercise, and then the assignment, you're pretty much on your way to doing the vast majority of tax returns. Yes, you are. Now, of course, there's a whole lot more to learn if you ever want to call yourself a tax preparer, but some of these tax preparers that call themselves tax preparers, this is pretty much all they can do. So what do we suggest? We suggest that you print out the forms that are below the presentation if you're working in Canvas, or in the class website where it says tax exercise, the first tax exercise. There's a 1040 form, then there's a Schedule 1, and then there's a Schedule A. So you'll want to have those three printed out. It really will make life easier instead of bouncing around if you're looking on your computer screen. Don't print out the tax tables. There are dozens of pages. You don't need those. Okay? So, let's get started on slide 11. The 1040 form. With the Republican tax cut of 2017, the IRS decided it was a great opportunity to overhaul the method of reporting our taxes. They scrapped two other forms, the 1040A and the 1040EZ. Everyone will now use the 1040. It has been simplified, and we put that in quotes, because the 1040 used to be two pages. It is now still two pages with an additional six schedules. Schedules 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 are used depending upon your situation, and one really has to wonder about the folks at the IRS. How could anyone possibly state with a straight face that adding an additional six pages is simpler? Add to that the confusion of which six pages you're supposed to use for your situation, and it's insane. It's absolutely insane. I'm still pretty confused, but I'm not alone. There's lots of people who are still trying to figure this thing out. Now, if you go on their website, what they sort of say, they say it's simpler. It's not. It's simpler for people who could have used the 1040EZ, but that was already pretty simple. Instead of using the 1040, but the 1040EZ was very simple. That's why it was called the 1040EZ. But they also go on to say that they believe that more and more people will be using tax software. In other words, you're never going to mess with the forms. So they are basically saying, we don't care how many forms we create because we hope that people don't bother with the tax forms. Instead, do it using software. Okay, I kind of get what they're saying. I think it was just a PR, public relations thing to say, the new 1040 form is easy. No, it's not. Yes, it is. Well, no, it's not. We'll see. You'll see that it's fairly straightforward. It's tedious, a little cumbersome. But if you slog through it, after a few times, you'll see, oh, yeah, I kind of go understand what's going on. So let's take a look at the page number 1, Form 1040, on slide number 12. On this form is the identifying information, your filing status, name or names, social security numbers, address, the dependents, your signatures, your occupation, and the social security numbers of dependents must be included, unless your child was recently born, in which case you get a grace period to get the number. Don't forget to sign your return. If you do forget, contact the IRS as soon as possible. Don't send them another return. What they'll do is they'll send you out a form called an affidavit. That is basically says, okay, I've already sent it in. Here's my signature. So don't send in another one. Call them, and they will help you. Now, here's an interesting little blurb here. In 1987, the IRS started requiring taxpayers to include the Social Security number of dependents, primarily children. 7 million children and other dependents mysteriously disappeared. How's that? Would anybody in the United States of Armenia cheat on their taxes? One of them is in the White House and won't show his taxes. Anyway, so let's take a look at the form. And here is the page number one. Now, I've made it a little bit bigger than normal just because it's harder to read on a smaller screen, so we have to scroll back and forth. And here's the identifying information. This gentleman, who is this? A. King Back. A. King Back. A. King Back. And he's head of household. Why doesn't he just pick single here? Well, because he has a dependent, Wayne D. Back. Wayne D. Back. Wayne, do you see what you're missing in the face-to-face class? And so he puts his name in, he puts his Social Security number. Don't forget to put your Social Security number down. He puts his address and whether he's blind or born before 1954. Here's where he says, I did have health insurance, and here's the presidential election campaign. You can give them money, but don't do it. Yeah, it's kind of an anachronism because nobody's using it anymore. That is a story that goes with that for you political science folks. And then he signs his return on the front page. You used to sign it on the back page, but now you sign on the front page. He signs it A. King Back, and A. King Back, of course, is a mattress tester. Yeah, I know. See what you're missing in the face-to-face class? We love to sign our return. We make sure we put our Social Security number up there. We don't want to anger the IRS, because what some people do is they would just conveniently forget to sign the return or put their Social Security number. Or in the margins, they would say, IRS sucks. Taxes are unconstitutional. You guys are icky. One gentleman put his tax return on the back of a T-shirt and sent it in, signed. And so the IRS, you know, they're people too, and they went to the Congress and said, look, this is not right. These are frivolous nuisance returns. And they're basically costing the government money because, you know, we have to deal with these things. And we don't like to be insulted. So the Congress said, okay, now you can have a fine. It used to be $500. Now I think it's $1,000. Per nuisance, per frivolous thing that you do. So don't write nasty things in the margins and do sign your return. Okay, so that's page number one. Now, what did they do? They just created a whole blank area. I don't know why they did this. They could have put the top of page number two, which fits in that blank area, down there, but they didn't. So I don't understand why. But that's, you know, that's the IRS. That's their job. And so that's the page number one. Pretty straightforward, right? Okay. Now let's take a look at the top of page number two. And here, this was meant to be streamlined. So on the lines, we'll take a look at it in a minute now. We have our wages, salaries, and tips, then our interest, dividends, retirement distributions, any Social Security benefits, and then a catch-all line, which is all other income. You see, this used to be on the 1040, and they took it off and put it on Schedule 1. And then these, the adjustments to income, the adjusted gross income, was at the bottom of page number one, and they took them off and took them off the 1040 form and put them on the Schedule 1 form. And so they have all been lumped onto Schedule 1. So let's take a quick look now. Let's go to the 1040 form and now scroll down to page number two, where we see A. King's, can't see it all together here, but we see the wages, salaries, tax-exempt interest, taxable interest, he has taxable interest, dividends, pension distributions, Social Security, and then that catch-all, that total income from that schedule number one. And so A. King has $51,900 in W-2 wages. That's the wages his employer has reported to the IRS. has about $100 in taxable interest. So he doesn't have any of these other things, and he certainly doesn't have a business or a farm or all these other things that get stuck on the Schedule 1, which used to be on the 1040 form, and we'll take a look at Schedule 1 in a bit. So he adds up his gross income and finds that he has $52,000 of gross income. Okay? That's lines 1, that constitutes lines 1 through 6. Now, line 7 is where we compute what's called the adjusted gross income. Adjustments are reductions in our income so that we pay fewer dollars in taxes. And so if you don't have any deductions, then you don't have any adjustments to income, then you don't do anything. But he does. And so now what used to be on the 1040 form is now on the schedule number 1. So here's the schedule number 1. It goes along with the form 1040. Here he puts his name and he puts his social security number. And then these were the additional incomes that we discussed. Alimony, capital gains, business, rental, real estate, farm income, unemployment compensation, and a few reserved places. But he doesn't have any of that, so he just leaves that all blank. And most people will not have these. Most people. Maybe they might have unemployment insurance here. And then here, at the bottom half of the Schedule 1, are the adjustments. And these are all items that allow you to reduce your income, which means you're going to pay fewer taxes. And in Aikens Back's case, he paid $1,000 to an IRA, a traditional IRA, which allows him to deduct the contribution from his taxes, and $1,000 in student loan interest. So his total adjustments are $2,000. Now, I know your eyes might be glazing over by now, but really, is it that difficult? Most people will never have most of these things. They might have one or two of them. And so you go ahead and find the ones that are applicable to you. You fill them in, and then you get a total here, 2,000. So what do we do with that total? We go back to the form 1040, and you don't put the 2,000 in. You just say, look, if you have no adjustments to income, well, then there's nothing you have to do. But otherwise, subtract that total adjustments on line 36 of Schedule 1 from this line right here, 52,000 minus 2,000. I would have put a line for the 2,000, but they don't do that. You know, what are you going to do? They decided not to do that. They wanted to make it as few lines as possible. So the 52,000 is subtracted by $2,000, our total adjustments, and we have 50 grand. Is that difficult? If you're confused already, go back and do it again, because it's really not that difficult. Tedious, boring, yes, I know, it's taxes, it's not fun. They're taxes, they're not fun, but they're important, right? Okay, so that's the adjusted gross income. And what do some people do? They add. That's what the IRS tells us. The IRS tells us that most problems with people's tax returns is they simply zigged when they should have zagged. They should have subtracted, but they added, whatever. So the IRS sends a lot of letters saying, you goofed, this is what you're supposed to do. So now, that is our adjusted gross income. And the adjusted gross income is a very important number. We'll come back to it in a bit. But it is used for many different things in your tax return. So we'll come back to that in a minute. But first, this is where it starts to get a little tricky, because everybody gets what's called a standard deduction. And that was one of the things they changed in the tax law 2017. They raised the standard deduction quite a bit, but they got rid of what were called personal exemptions. So basically it's a wash. So the standard deduction for a single people is $12,000. The standard deduction for a married couple is $24,000. And the standard deduction for a head of household is $18,000. Now, if A. King didn't have any additional what are called itemized deductions, he would have picked the $18,000. But he did. He's able to reduce his taxes, his taxable income, more than the standard deduction. You get to take the standard deduction or the itemized deductions, but you can't take both. And this is a source of confusion for many people. Now, can A. King just simply pick a number out of the air and throw it here into line 8 where he has says, yeah, oh, sure, I got $22,000 of itemized deductions? No. He has to itemize those deductions, which is a fancy word for list them, write them down, enumerate. I like that word, enumerate. And where did he do that? On the homeowner's friend, Schedule A, itemized deductions. A. King back, he puts his Social Security number there under Schedule A, itemized deductions. The Republicans have gotten rid of a lot of the deductions that we used to have and put limits on others. Before we go here, let's run back to the presentation and see. Okay, good. So this is what we just went over. We went over the top of page 2, and so we computed the adjusted gross income. Many tax items are tied to the adjusted gross income, such as the ability to contribute to retirement accounts or utilize certain deductions and personal exemptions. And we said we'll come back to that in a minute. So now let's take a look at the schedule. We already went through this. My apologies. I should have backtracked. But the Schedule 1 is the additional income, the top half, and he didn't have any alimony or business or farm income or rental income, but he did have a couple of adjustments. He had the traditional IRA contributions, and he had student loan interest, and we saw how those were allowed him to reduce his income from $52,000 down to $50,000 and compute the adjusted gross income. So now let's go to the next slide. Okay, and here's where we are here. We're discussing the standard deduction, which everyone is eligible for, single $12,000, married $24,000, head of household $18,000, or the itemized deductions. And this is where we are on the form, so let's go back to that now. Deductions must be itemized on Schedule A. Let's read. Medical expenses, state and local taxes, interest paid, gifts to charity, casualty. If it's not greater than your standard deduction, then it's more beneficial to take the standard deduction and pay fewer dollars in taxes. You get to take the standard deduction or the itemized deductions, but you can't take both. So now let's go back to Schedule A and show that. Let's take a look at what's the first group. Here it is. Let's show the medical and dental expenses. Well, now wait a minute. He's got a son. Why doesn't he have any medical or dental expenses? Well, remember the adjusted gross income? A. King would put down his medical and dental expenses, but then he would put down the adjusted gross income. Now, they don't use the term. They just say, go get line 7 from the form 1040. But that's the adjusted gross income. In his case, it was $50,000. And so he would then multiply the adjusted gross income by 7.5%. Now, why do you do that? Because what the Congress is saying, look, until you have paid at least 7.5% of your adjusted gross income, you don't get to deduct any medical expenses. So that would mean he would need $3,750. Do it. Calculate $50,000 times 0.075, 7.5%. So if he had $4,000 or $10,000 worth of medical expenses, then he could start deducting anything above the $3,750. And if I'm going too fast, pause the presentation, back up a little bit, and make sure you understand it. Because it's not hard. I know it's tedious. I know it makes your eyes want to glaze over. But you can do it. It's not that hard. It's just tedious and boring and blah. So, luckily, and this is in a case where you don't really want to take advantage of it, because that means somebody's very sick and you don't have very good health insurance and somebody paid a lot of money for health care. Right, so he leaves that blank. Now, here's where we get into taxes, taxes that you paid. And this is where one of the, we'll get to that in a minute. This is one of the things that the Republicans did to attack and to pay back, get payback to the states that are generally Democratic, like California, like New York. They lowered the amount of maximum state and local taxes. So here you get to put down your income taxes from the state or your general sales tax, all right? You can include either income taxes or general sales taxes, but you can't do both. And so sometimes it makes sense to do sales tax, sometimes it makes sense to do income taxes, but in A. Kingsback's situation, he did his income taxes for state of California for $1,000. He also has a condominium, so he paid $3,900 in real estate taxes, property taxes. And he has a car, and he pays $200 in DMV taxes. That's called the vehicle license fee. It's a personal property tax. So you add those three up, and you get $5,100. Now, notice that if he had over $10,000, the Republicans say, oh, no, we're not going to let you deduct any more than $10,000. And the states like New Jersey and California and New York and Washington, D.C., Chicago, they were pretty upset about this because that's basically an attack on their high, high taxes. And you can just tell the Republicans are saying, we don't care, we're going to go after you guys because we don't like you because you don't vote Republican. Hey, that's the world we live in these days. And so the states tried to find ways of getting around it, making the taxes a charitable contributions. And the IRS, the Trump administration said, oh, no, you don't. No, you can't do that. And so, it's still in the courts. We'll see what happens. But just assuming that he had no other deductions. What happened? It disappeared. Why did it do that? I just love Windows. Don't you just love Windows? Let me see if I can get it back here. Where did the Schedule A go? Is that it right there? My apologies. Technical issues. There it is, but now it's way too big. Don't you just love... Someday I'm going to not have a Windows machine, and I'm going to be very, very happy when that day comes. But until that day comes, I'm stuck with them. And so here we go. Wait. My apologies. Come on, baby. Come on up. Come on up. Okay. And now let's make it 100%. Okay. So let's go back. And so if he had just had the $5,100, would it make sense for him to choose itemized deductions? No, because he gets a standard deduction of $18,000 because he has a son and he's the head of household. So what's going to happen? Here, because he has a condominium, he pays home mortgage interest, and that's why we call the Schedule A the homeowner's friend, especially in states like California and other states that where you pay a lot of money for a home. And so he pays $16,200. Now, that sounds like a lot of money, and it is, and that's what people pay to own a home here in San Diego. It's a very expensive proposition. So you pay a lot of money in homeowner's interest. And now, with the $5,100 and the $16,200, is he going to go over the $18,000? Yes. Yes, he is. Now, oops, I forgot to put this. This belongs down here, too. I should have added that number down here, too. Add lines 8A. And so, okay. So I forgot to add that it should be all added up here and put right there. Well, let's put it through right now, $16,200. And so now you have to be careful because there's a limitation. It doesn't have it here. Yes, your mortgage interest deduction may be limited. And we'll see what the again another attack on the high high property value states, which typically vote Democratic, they said now you can only deduct the interest on the first $750,000 of your mortgage. Before it was $1 million, and so that's a way to get back at the high property tax states, and so the high property value states. So we don't have that problem. His home isn't that much, as we'll see later on. So he doesn't have to worry about that. And so here is where we would put there it is, $16,200. I forgot to put it right over there, but I put it right over here where it's more important. And then he paid $700 in charity. So he has a church or whatever, KPBS or Father Joe's Village, or maybe Southwestern Community College Foundation. And so he gave $700 to charity and puts that number here. And then there were a whole bunch of other deductions that they got rid of, and they're gone. So now you add these three categories up, the taxes, the mortgage interest, and the charity, and you get $22,000. And where does that go? As we saw, it goes back. I mean, I got to go. They all disappeared. So where is it? Here it is. So it's going to be big again. My apology. Oh, no, it came out small. All right. And so let's get this guy up to here, bring him back to 100%. Okay. So now we go back to the 1040 form, and we see that, yes, he puts the $22,000 here. If it were not above $18,000, if it were not above his standard deduction, it would make more sense for him to just put, they disappeared again. This is not good. Why is this happening? I do not know. My apologies. I do not know why this is happening. I don't know what to tell you, folks, but other than this is technical, this is what happens when you have a Windows machine. Here you go. Back again. Let's hope it doesn't disappear again. And back to 100%. And now go down to, so here we are. We have the $22,000 here from the itemized deductions. Oh, I hope I haven't lost you. My apologies. So now, what do we do? This qualified business income deduction is not for people who have an employment position as an employee. It's more for people who have their own business, so we're not going to deal with that. So we're going to leave that alone, and we finally now find what the taxable income is. You take the $50,000 minus the $22,000 and get $28,000. So finally we know what our taxable income is. We've deducted as much as we could. Let's go back to the presentation, and now this is the discussion of Schedule A. And here's more discussion of Schedule A, so we'll go through that quickly. Medical expenses must be at least 7.5% of AGI. Taxes, state and local taxes are now limited to $10,000. Interest is capped. Mortgage interest is now capped at $750 for homes purchased starting in 2018. Gifts to charity and total deductions. And many, as we said, many other deductions were removed by the Republicans in 2017. So now, the qualified business income deduction, as we said, we're not going to deal with that because it's mostly for small business owners, and it's up to 20% of their income. Now, if you've done any reading on this, you'll find that it is the most convoluted, insane provision in the new tax law. It is absolutely something out of some kind of a nightmare of accounting or something. It's as if these people who created it were medieval torture. I mean, they didn't use torture devices. They used accounting to drive people insane. And this is Forbes magazine, which is, you know, generally pro-business. The provision is rife with limitations, exceptions to limitations, phase-ins and phase-outs, and critical but poorly defined terms of art. It was meant to mirror the tax cuts that corporation's receipt. And I have read over this thing several times because it affects me personally. And I think I understand it. I think. I hope. Because I'm going to use it. And we'll see what the IRS comes back and says, oh no, you didn't understand it. So here we finally, congratulations, we have finally determined how much of our income is taxable income. We now can compute our tax due on line 11. Well, sort of, at least we can get started, right? Don't you wish it were that easy? Because what we're going to do now is we're going to take that $28,000 and we're now going to go into the tax tables, which were conveniently also kablooied. So let's get them back. And they are right here, and hopefully will not disappear from us. Again, we'll go to 100%. And so what we're going to do now is scroll through the tax tables and look for $28,000. So this is something, this is what, like 25 pages or so, so you don't want to print this out. But see, we're scrolling down, and we're looking for $28,000. There's 10, 18, 20... 20, there it is, 28,000. So let's move this over and up a little bit. Because what we need to take a look at is which category we're in. Here's the 28,000 row. And what category? Single, married, filing, jointly married, filing, ahead of household. This is it. So we come across the 28,000 and we find the column that we're in, which is, whoops, did everybody. Which is head of household. There it is. Keeps doing the whole line. I apologize. Now, why can't we use this one right here? 28,000. You see 28,000 there, too? You see? At least, but less than. So you have to, as soon as you hit 28,000, you have to go to the next line. You can't use the previous one. So that says 3,091. Do you see that? 3,091? Now, did I get it right? Let's see. Aha! I got it right. Tax from the tax table. Now, what happens? Well, as soon as we hit 100,000, now you can't use the tax table anymore. You have to use a different method. And then there's some other methods depending on your situation. But the vast majority of people are going to use the tax table. The vast majority of people are going to use the income tax table, this little puppy right here. And it's not that hard. People complain about, it's so damn difficult. I don't think so. I mean, it's tedious, yes. It's boring, yes. And it's something that only an accounting major and accounting professors love. Actually, I've talked to accounting professors. They don't like it that much either. But it's the reality. So do it. Go back. If you're completely confused, stop. Walk away. Come back 7 minutes, 10 minutes, an hour later, and do it again. And it's not that hard. It really isn't that hard, folks. So let's get rid of the tax table for now and go back to the 1040 form and realize that finally we know how much taxes we have to pay. Well, not really, because there's something else we got to worry about. So tax due, before we do this, before we go into tax credits, let's discuss the tax due. The taxable income from line 10 is used to compute the tax table. That's what we just did. We used the tax table up to $100,000. And we said most people will use this table. As soon as you go over $100,000, now you have to use the tax rate schedules, or you use one of the other methods, or you might have to use the alternative minimum tax from Schedule 2. What? Yeah, see, this is why you wish it were that simple, that you could just use the tax table, but it's not. Now, we're going to get back to a discussion about something that we discussed back in the previous presentation, and that's marginal tax rates. Our system is called a progressive tax system. The more money you make, the higher your marginal tax rate. Which in now, after 2017, they're 10, 12, 22, 24, 32, 35, and 37. Versus an average tax, which you just take 10% or 20% or 30% of everything. This is promoted by many advocates of what's called a flat tax. So let's take a look on slide number 819 at the marginal tax rates. Here are the marginal tax rates for 2018. If you're single, The first $9,525 is taxed at 10%. If you're married, the first $19,050 is taxed at 10%. As soon as you move above $9,525 and you're single, now you're taxed at 12%. And of course, likewise, if you're married, $19,050, you now are at the 12%. Once you start making $38,700, now you're in the 22% tax bracket. And 77.4 for married, 22. And that's why we say once people reach the middle class, they're often at that 22% or 25%, it was what it was before 2018, tax bracket. Now you start reaching into the upper class, upper middle class, and then the upper classes. You see the tax rate starting to jump higher and higher and higher until finally, if you're making $500,000 and you're single, you're paying 37%. If you're making $600,000 and you're married, you're paying 37%. Now, the 2017 tax cuts will give the average poor family a tax cut of about $60. The middle class will see an average tax cut of $930, but not everybody, depending on their situation. If they have those a lot of deductions that were basically disallowed, they're not going to get a tax cut. Folks in the 95th to 99th income tax brackets will get about $13,480 back. The top 0.1% will see an average tax cut of almost $200,000. And that's why you hear people say it benefits the rich. Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. What are you going to say? I mean, there it is. However, it gets worse. Once the plan is fully phased in, taxes will go up for the bottom 40%, will be unchanged for the middle 40%, go down slightly for those people in the 80 to 99%, and fall sharply for the top 1%. That's when it finally is phased in after 2025. What can you say, folks? I mean, you make your own decision whether or not Payano is being unduly critical of this Tax Cut Act of 2017. Now, I want you to watch what happens. We're going to go to slide 20 here. Watch what happens. Look at that 9,525. Boop! You see what happened? 9,325 for 2017. And what happened to the 19,050 for the married folks? 18,650. What's going on here? From 2001 to 2012, the tax rates were temporary and adjusted every couple of years. After the fiscal cliff fight at the end of 2012, the rates became permanent until the end of 2017. The tax rates are temporary again after the 2017 tax cut bill, but Republicans have vowed to make them permanent by 2025. Who knows how that's going to happen? But what's going on here? The tax rates don't change. Well, they did for 2017, but they won't until 2025 again. It's the brackets that change with inflation. You see, in 2017, it was 9,325. If we go back to 2018, it's 9,525. In other words, it is the brackets are being raised with inflation. And if they don't do that, as inflation continues, which it does, we wind up moving into higher tax brackets and getting a tax increase, even though, it's that we haven't done anything. We haven't making any more money. We may make more money, but if our income stays the same, but inflation keeps going up, we wind up getting a tax increase. And that's why they increase the tax brackets every year with inflation. Notice also that the tax brackets at the upper end were raised dramatically. Let's go now to 2017 and see that it was $416,700, $418,000 for single, $416,700, and for 7,700 for married. And then if we go back to 2018, we say they've gone up to 500 and 600,000. Another gift to the very wealthy. Okay, so now let's now jump from 2017 to 2016. Watch what happens to this single 10% bracket. It goes down to 9,275. So the percentage rates normally do not change. Of course, they were changed in at the end of 2017 for 2018. The tax brackets are simply adjusted upward according to the inflation rate. The 2015 brackets were lower than 2016, 14 were lower than 15, etc. And remember that these tax rates are all temporary until 2025, in which case they go back to what they were. But it's all political. So slide number 22. Let's continue here. Let's do a simple calculation. It's confusing to people because people think, well, wait a minute. Once you hit the 22%, does that mean all your income is in? No, just the marginal. That's why we use the word marginal. For a single person, this is not a kingback, this is somebody else, but a single person making $39,700 of taxable income. Remember, this is after all the deductions and the adjustments and all the other stuff to where we finally get to the taxable income. The first $9,525 is taxed at 10%. So that means $9,525 times 10%, that's $952.50. But now, anything between $9,525 and $38,700 is taxed at 12%. So you do that calculation, you subtract the $9,525 because you don't want to get taxed again on that. You've already been taxed at 10%. And then you multiply that times 12% and you wind up with $3,501. And then anything above $38,700, in this case, $39,700 is then taxed, and there's a bug right there, that should be 38,700, I'll fix that, is taxed at 22%. So that's, I made it very easy, I made it $1,000. $39,700 minus $38,700 times 22% is $220. And so this person, $39,700, is paying a total tax of $4,673.50. But the key takeaway is that every dollar that person makes until the next bracket is being taxed at 22%. So this is what you say about marginal brackets, and people don't quite always understand what you're saying. But the next dollar you make is always taxed at your current marginal rate. You understand? The first $9,525 is taxed at 10%. Between $9,525 and $38,700, you're taxed at 12%. And then anything above that $38,700 is taxed at 22%. If you move to the next bracket, it'd be 24, the next bracket 32. So once you start making some serious change, now you're paying far more money on your next dollar of income. If we go back to this single taxpayer and take a look at their average rate, that's simply taking the taxes that they paid, $4,673.50, divided by $39,700, it turns out they're paying a little less than 12%, 11.8%. So we have to ask ourselves, who would win and who would lose with a flat tax? The flat tax advocates would say, you know what, everybody should pay 20%. Everybody should pay 17%. Well, who would win? Yeah, we know who would win, the very wealthy. And the lower income brackets would lose. Well, then the flat tax advocates say, well, look, let's shelter the first $30,000 worth of income. Let's add a little bit of progressivity into the system. Okay, there's room for debate. Let's talk. And then there's a whole other group that say, no. We don't want to tax income. No, that's the wrong thing to do. You don't want people to be saying, you know what, I'm going to have to pay, you know, 30-some percent on the next dollar I make. Why bother? You want people to make as much money as you can. When do you tax them? When they consume. A consumption tax, a value-added tax, sometimes called the fair tax. You hear people call it the fair tax. Well, you know, that's not a bad idea. Let's talk. Let's talk about the tax code. Everybody agrees that it's broken. Yes, we can all agree on that, but nobody can agree on what to do about it. So there's room for discussion. I've always been a fan of the consumption tax because I want people to make as much money as they can, and I don't want them to spend as much money as they can. I want them to save it and invest it. And but you know, then there's other problems with that. You know, nothing's perfect. There was a guy running for Congress. Herman Cain was his name. He called it 999, a 9% income tax, a 9% capital gains tax, and a 9% value added tax. But he got in trouble because he had affairs, which didn't seem to bother the current president. Anyway, slide number 24, the marriage penalty. What is the marriage penalty? Well, if the marginal rates are higher for single taxpayers, how come we sometimes hear people complain about the so-called marriage penalty? Well, because the second wage earner in the family pays their taxes at the highest marginal rate, they do not get to take advantage of the lower tax brackets. Actually, married couples with only one wage earner get rewarded, not punished, but of course they need more money because they're two people. Now, in 2017, the Republicans removed the marriage penalty for all of the brackets except the very last one. So you see, you know, 95-25 times 2 is 19050. 38-700 times 2 is 77-400. 200,000 times 2 is 400,000. But now, 500,000 times, no. So in other words, the idea being, look, once you're up in the upper income brackets, you've got all the bases covered. You've got the milk and the shoes and the rent covered. And so you can afford to pay a higher tax rate. That's why we call it a progressive tax system. And removing the marriage penalty was good for married couples, but they created a new marriage penalty. Both single and married filers have the same $10,000 state and local limitations. Again, this is another jab at the blue states, as they're called now. We have red states and blue states. We're not United States anymore. So they gave the marriage penalty. It used to be the marriage penalty was only removed for the first two brackets, but the Republicans removed it for all of them except the last one. Slide number 24, Schedule 2. Wait a minute. That's a bad font. Somehow the font got messed up. My apologies. The alternative minimum tax. Oh, right. That's supposed to... the alternative minimum tax, Schedule 2. It's supposed to look scary, but on this machine it doesn't look as scary as it does on the other machine. I got to play with that. My apologies. But this is the alternative minimum tax. It's also included on line 11, tax due. It was originally meant to make sure everyone who could afford to pay some taxes would pay some taxes. It was originally targeted to the very wealthy. However, the alternative minimum tax was never indexed to inflation. When it was created in the late 1960s, $100,000 was an unusual and a substantial income. But, I mean, don't get me wrong, $100,000 is still a pretty good income, but it's not what it was in 1969 when a house cost $12,000 or $15,000, $20,000 and a car cost $2,000. So the AMT will continue to affect more and more the middle class as wages climb with inflation, especially to income families in the high property value blue states. It was eliminated for businesses in the 2017 tax bill, but not for individuals. So I'll fix that. I apologize. It doesn't look good on this machine. I'll play with it on several other machines and make sure it looks good to all machines. Now, slide 26. lines 12 through 15. Here's where we finally get to the tax credits that I briefly mentioned, and I apologize because I didn't want to mention them yet. But here on lines 12 through 15 are what are called tax credits. The tax credit for children, let's go back to this 1040. Okay, here we are. We're here at tax credits. The first major tax credit is a tax credit for children, which is $2,000 for every child up to the age of 16. Once they hit 17, no more. And A. King Back's son, Wayne D. Back, is under 17, so he gets to take advantage of that $2,000 tax credit. Now, if there's any other tax credits, they're on Schedule 3, but in this case, that's all he has. So he gets to deduct his tax credit, $2,000, from the tax due. And you love tax credits. Let's go back to our presentation. We love tax credits. Tax credits are a dollar for dollar reduction of our taxes due. And there are foreign tax credits, child independent tax care credits, education credits, retirements. And you would learn about this when you took some kind of tax preparation course of all the different taxes and credits that there are. But in this case, because he has a child, he gets to take advantage of the $2,000 tax credit. So are you still with us? Yeah, I know. And then we're down to now slide 13, which is just a subtotal. And now line 13, 1091. And now on line 14 are other taxes. And most people are never going to be affected by this. But these are Social Security, Medicare tax contributions that self-employed people have to make. If you have anybody who works in your house, you have to pay their Social Security and Medicare contributions. The Affordable Care Act tax, any retirement withdrawal penalties, these go on Schedule 4. You see, they all used to be on the 1040 form, and the tax credits used to be on the 1040 form, but now they have Schedule 3 and Schedule 4. But most people will never be affected by this. It's just will not be affected by it. So we find that A. King certainly is not affected by it. It's empty. So finally, oh my goodness, are you exhausted? Are you still with us? I know, go back and do it over again. That's what's great about online learning. You can stop it, pause it, back it up, come back to it later. Finally, on line 15, we know how much we owe. Well, maybe not. There might be another mitigating circumstance. But in most cases, yes, we know how much we owe. And in this case, we're on line 15, and we write that number down from line 13, and we now know how much we owe. Well, maybe not, because we might also be able to take advantage of the earned income credit. And the earned income credit is you can think of it as a reverse tax. People who are making very little money, especially if they have kids, we don't want them to go on what's now called temporary assistance to needy families. It used to be called welfare. And so we say, look, if you're working, we'll give you money to keep working instead of taxing you. And that's the earned income credit. So if you don't make a whole lot of money and you have kids, you definitely want to file your taxes and go to the VITA folks, the Volunteer Income Tax Assistance folks, because their system automatically picks it up. And if you don't do that, if you don't call me, if you don't, not call, but if you don't file your taxes, the IRS isn't going to call you and say, you know what, you're eligible for the earned income. It doesn't work that way. So you've got to find out. But in this case, A. King makes enough money, and his W-2 withholdings are put here on line 16. And that's the withholdings that came out of his paycheck that go on the W-2 form. So let's take a look at this. Here's the W-2 form. Right. Oh, I'm sorry. Here's a slide that talks about tax credits. Tax credits versus tax deductions. We kind of already went over this. A tax credit is a dollar-for-dollar reduction of your taxes. Very, very cool. A tax deduction is, you know, pretty cool because it reduces your tax by the marginal tax bracket, but we love tax credits. Because if you're in the 22% tax bracket, that $100 tax deduction gives you $22 fewer dollars in federal taxes, $7 in reductions California taxes, so you get a $29 total tax reduction. There's never a reduction in Social Security taxes. But a tax credit, $100, reduces your margin, your tax by $100, which is very, very cool. Tax credits are worth more than tax deductions. Do we like tax credits? Yes, we do. Now, here's the W-2 form, the little snitch that tells the IRS how much we made, how much we withheld, yeah, any Social Security, Medicare, all that other good stuff. Yes. And the IRS says, you know what? You got to pay as you go. You can't have no money taken out of your paycheck and then at the end of the year pay everything in once. No, they'll fine you. They'll give you an under withholding penalty. So do your best to find out how much you owe and get $100 back, pay them $100. But what happens in practice is that many people wind up with very large refunds. And they say, I like that. You know, I use that for my vacation, or, you know, that's forced savings. Well, you're giving the feds a free loan, which is not a big deal because interest rates are so low, it's really not that big a deal. But if you're using your refund to pay down your credit card at 19.99%, you're paying 20% while the feds are getting a free loan at whatever, 1%. So do your best to estimate your tax bill. And if that means going to HR and filling out one of those W-form forms, get somebody to help you. I'll help you. Somebody can help you. It's not that hard. And what are these two numbers, 90% and 100%? They might be actually very useful in answering one of the questions on the assignment. There's a hint right there, folks. Hint, hint, hint. 90 and 100%. Do your best to estimate how much you owe. Right? And then we already discussed the earned income credit and any other payments or credits from Schedule 5. And relax, we're in the home stretch. I'm tired. Okay. So let's go back to the 1040 form just to make sure we've done everything right. Right. We put in the amount that he got from his W-2, $1,500, and he didn't get any other refundable credits, any amounts from Schedule 5. And so here are his total payments on line 18, $1,500. Okay? Ta-da! Schedule 5 is where we put all these other payments and extension payments and other refundable credits that weren't on the 1040 form. And this is an opportunity to show you how kind of crazy the IRS, how convoluted they did to make this work. You see, all these things used to be on the 1040 form. So let's run over and see if we can catch that schedule. There's the Schedule 5, and we have to make it bigger. And so what we see are numbers. Why did they start at 65 and go all the way up to 75? Because these used to be the numbers that were on the 1040 form. So anybody who didn't know that, they would look and say, why did they start at 65? Well, I know why, because that's the way they were in the old 1040 form, but you just gotta wonder what the hell is going on there. And this is the days we live in. Everything is topsy-turvy. So, yes, as we said, on these other payments, these estimated quarterly payments, these extension payments, all these other payments that, again, virtually no one else is going to have to worry about, are all put on Schedule 5, and then the total goes to line 17 on 1040, which will not be there for the vast majority of people. Okay? All right. So now, how do you avoid common errors, filing errors? Check your arithmetic twice. Attach the necessary documentation. Put your Social Security number, tax year, tax form on the check. Make your checks payable to the United States Treasury. Keep a photocopy or return. Put proper postage on your mailing envelope. And finally, check everything again. If you need more time, file an extension. So let's go back and find that A. King owed 1,092. He paid 1,500, so he overpaid by $409. And then what they want you to do is they want you to say, give it to me. I want it refunded to me, right? So give me my $409. Because if you don't do that, they might think, oh, you want it applied to next year. No, I don't. I want it now. And here's where you put in your routing number for your bank and account number, which is just easier than having it be a check. Saves money, saves paper, and it's safer for the most part if you put the right data in. And then if this number were less than this number, in other words, you hadn't paid enough, then you would have to say, okay, I'm going to send you a check or pay you online. And here's where if you don't pay enough, you can get hit with an estimated tax payment, an under withholding payment. But if this happens to you, what you do is you send them a letter saying, I'm sorry, I goofed, I won't do it again next year. And I've helped people do that, and every time it's worked. Every time you do that, the IRS has said, okay, we'll let you go this time. So cool. Cool? Huh, I know. Go back over and do it again and again, because, uh-oh, if you find you've made a mistake, should you leave the country, commit suicide, pretend it didn't happen? This is what some people do. And they, after 6 months, a year, you know, hey, they got away with it. And then they get a friendly little letter. IRS moves very slowly, folks, but they do move. They get a friendly little letter, official business only, IRS, and say, you goofed, here's how much you owe us. Or letter D, file form 1040X. Yes, that's what you do. If you find the error first, you file form 1040X, which means you amended the return. You might wind up getting money back, right? But if you find a mistake, don't ignore it, because the IRS will eventually catch it, and usually. And then, and then you're going to look like a silly man. Oh, and don't forget the state of California. My apologies. Once the federal 1040 form is finished, you get to tackle the state of California's form 540. Cute, huh? No, fortunately, it's far less than half the work, folks. It's usually just two forms. The 540 form and then the 540 CA, which stands for California Adjustments. Why? Because the state of California doesn't tax unemployment benefits, but the feds do. The feds allow you to deduct your state and local income taxes. The California says, no, there are taxes, you can't deduct them. So, I know that was very painful for many of you, tedious, boring. Go back over it. Do it a few times. There's a second tax exercise that you work on your own, an answer key. Then there's the assignment. And after you do it a few times, you actually go, you know, this isn't really that hard. I know it's boring. I know it's tedious. But you can do it. And you will be so proud of yourself. And you will basically now be ready to become one of these volunteers in the Volunteer Income Tax assistance program, and who knows, it could turn into a career. Cool? Alright, now in our last presentation on taxes, we'll take a look at some tax strategies, we'll discuss audits, and we'll be finished of taxes. Hooray! See you in our next presentation.